My name is Zach Cox. I'm a holistic dentist and a homeopath. I live in Somerset and work in the Cotswolds. I'm a holistic dentist, so I combine conventional dentistry with, I guess, what you would call the alternative or complementary type of health practitioner. So I deal with a whole range of health issues which manifest in the mouth or may be triggered by the mouth.
If someone was to go to you rather than to a conventional dentist, can you just tell us a bit about what the difference is?
Yeah, I mean, most of my patients, I guess, are coming to get the mercury fillings removed in a safe fashion, because mercury is a well-known toxic substance and has to be handled carefully. So I have sort of special removal equipment, rather like you'd have if you were removing asbestos from a building. You'd have special equipment for that. I have special equipment for removing mercury from people's mouths.
I mean, this is interesting, isn't it? Because when your dentist is in there drilling away at a kind of silvery coloured amalgam filling, there's little bits of stuff going everywhere around inside your mouth, isn't there?
Well, there can be, yeah. Yeah, and we try to minimise that with our specialist equipment, try to minimise people's exposure to it, which I believe is very important.
Yeah, can you just explain a bit about amalgam and mercury? Because most people, you know, they just expect that whenever they're getting a silvery filling, amalgam or whatever, which I understand they don't use as much nowadays, that it's safe.
Well, I mean, this has been a debate that's raged on for 200 years nearly. In fact, the American Dental Association sprung out of this debate because one group of dentists wanted to use gold and other things for fillings. Another group wanted to use mercury and silver and other bits of metal combined to make the amalgam. And so the debate has been raging for a long, long time. I think it's finally coming to a head because in America, the FDA have announced that you can't put mercury fillings into pregnant women or into women who are thinking about getting pregnant even, so or for breastfeeding women. So I think the its days are numbered, and it will be phased out over a fairly long period. Of course, dentists by and large say that it's safe, whereas holistic dentists say that it's extremely dangerous. So it's sort of you take your pick, really.
Do you have any evidence of it being dangerous, amalgam?
Well, I think there is a fair amount. Yeah, I mean, there's studies done in mostly in Scandinavian countries after they banned it and removed it. They did find some health benefits from removing it. Yes.
What you know, you're part of this World Doctors Alliance. You've been very outspoken against the government's COVID policies. What way does a dentist have any qualification to make decisions about a virus?
Well, yeah, I mean, we deal with viruses all the time, and we deal with, like, you know, herpes, whatever. Yeah, we get a fair amount of medical training, and I kind of made it my interest to study the science on this. I wrote a book about it during the lockdown because I was getting so fed up with the never-ending nonsense that was being paraded. And I think it was Lord Sumption who said it was not only people's responsibility, but their duty to study the science on this and to come to their own conclusions. So I think any citizen is enabled to look at this.
Okay, so can you tell us what your book's called and give us a summary of some of the main points you're making in it?
Oh my God, it's basically a whole breakdown of the whole lockdown. I cover everything in there, really, from the PCR to the hydroxychloroquine to the insanity of lockdown, really. I mean, lockdowns, as you know, cause harm. I mean, if you effectively close the hospitals, then all those people who should have been getting treatment in hospitals will suffer. And I think there's millions of cancer patients who have been left to the wolves. I've had one person, a very distressed lady who was diagnosed with breast cancer in February and then was lined up for operations and whatnot in March. And, of course, they were cancelled and she was left to her own devices, which is obviously, if you've been diagnosed with cancer, you know how scary that is. And for her, it was terrifying. And I think the health service has really let people down like that, you know, and that's happened right across the board. I think there's been something like 30,000 excess deaths in people's homes. Only 10% of them were actually COVID related. So somewhere around about 27,000 excess deaths in people's houses over the lockdown, the first lockdown period.
So as a medical professional, what do you think are the, you know, maybe two or three big reasons why medical professionals are getting concerned about the way things are going with this COVID? I mean, obviously, from my point of view as a journalist, I'm quite really startled by the way that a pandemic or otherwise, you know, a flu season, which took place between March and roughly in June, the end of June, with the old Gombert's curve of patients going up and then down again, seems to be being kind of almost going on forever. I was just hearing on the radio yesterday, oh, well, we are hoping that things might be back to normal by next Easter. So this is going on forever and ever. And it's a little bit like the endless wars, you know, the war in Afghanistan that's still going on, the Iraq, the Libyan situation, all these wars going on and on and on. We've got a similar kind of thing with this pandemic, it seems to me. But anyway, what's your main points that you think medically that have jumped out to you?
Well, I think the main point is we've had flu seasons before. We just didn't have the media hype. And Lord Sumption, in his speech to the Cambridge Law Society, I hope you've seen that, and I urge all your listeners to read the transcript and have a look at that. Because,
well, yeah, we had an excerpt from it 2 weeks ago, and okay, yeah, it is. It's extremely, yeah.
He outlines kind exactly of forensic. He outlines what's going on. It's the death of democracy, I would say, from what he said, to summarise what he said. So going back to the lockdown, I mean, the most obvious comparison we can make is with Sweden and our lockdown and end of lockdown, or end of the peak of the lockdown, coincided virtually within days of Sweden. So, and they didn't lock down. So their pandemic ended within 48 hours of ours, presumably because of herd immunity, because they haven't got a vaccine or anything exciting like that. And seeing as ours ended within 48 hours of theirs, I would suggest that we therefore have herd immunity too. Despite locking down, Carl Hennigan said we locked down on after the peak of the infection. So the peak of the infection, he said, was the 18th of March. We locked down on the 23rd. And as you know, the disease was downgraded from a disease of high consequence on the 19th of March by the UK government. So, and the reason for that was because they said there was a low mortality overall. So it was no longer a disease of high consequence. So why did we lock down is the question everyone should be asking. And secondly, if you don't lock down like Sweden didn't, why did their pandemic end the same time as ours? If theirs ended presumably because of herd immunity, ours ended the same time, presumably we have herd immunity. So this long tail that it's got, where June, July, August, September, nobody was dying virtually. I mean, there were one or two deaths and COVID wards were by and large empty. That's 4 straight months where nothing was happening.
Yeah, but hang on, because the death rate is creeping up, actually.
Well, June, July, August and September, they weren't completely flat. COVID admissions completely flat. Deaths completely flat. That means that the pandemic is essentially over at that point when you have 4 clear months of nothing happening. I don't think anyone can dispute that. And I think what we see now is a new season. It's a new seasonal flu.
Any other medical reasons, do you think, why people should be sceptical about some of the directives coming from central government? I would add my own in a way. I shouldn't probably be doing this, but, you know, I'm extremely concerned about revolving door syndrome, which is where you've got for-profit industry people with serious amounts of shareholdings in big pharma vaccine firms whose loyalty to the public is absolutely questionable, where they're making many of these decisions. So I'm just asking you, from your point of view, which decisions that have been made over the last few months would you medically question?
Well, there's so many. I mean, it's hard to know where to begin. You're so right. The conflicts of interest are now coming to the surface. And I think that's what the public should be looking at in great detail. And for crying out loud, where are the lawyers? As Lord Sumption said, you know, the silence from the human rights lawyers and the human rights organisations has been deafening. And it's about time the lawyers stood up and protected the people. If you have financial interests in vaccinations, you should not be advising on these boards, in my opinion. And I don't know, I mean, in what other walk of life could you have such a huge conflict of interest as holding £600,000 worth of shares in GSK, one of the vaccine manufacturers, and still be the chief scientific officer advising everyone to have a vaccine? I mean, the need for a vaccine is very questionable because this disease, COVID-19, predominantly hit the over 80s. And those people had very severe comorbidities, I'm not quite sure how to put it, but how they put that as comorbidities, because most people who died in hospitals had things such as terminal cancer or heart attacks or run over by a bus. So the deaths within 28 days of a positive PCR test for any reason, and then they're still classified as a COVID death, to me is a sham. If you test positive on Tuesday, on Thursday, you get run over by a bus and they put you down as a COVID death, then that is, in my opinion, falsifying the records and fraud.
Yeah, but not all these people have been run over in a car accident, have they? I mean, most of them have got other things, and it may be that they would have survived if they hadn't have got COVID, maybe.
If you have a positive PCR test and you have a heart attack subsequently within 28 days, you go down as a COVID death. Or if you have a stroke, or if you have Alzheimer's or dementia or terminal cancer, it's fudging the figures, in my opinion.
And what about this idea of people being asymptomatic, being able to transmit diseases even though they don't have any symptoms?
Well, that has clearly been shown to be nonsense. Even Fauci himself has said that asymptomatic people don't drive pandemics in the entire history of respiratory diseases. They've never been the drivers of pandemics. So, asymptomatic spread is something that we were told to be scared of, but the WHO themselves, Maria van Kerkhove, who's head of the emerging diseases at WHO, said that it was very rare, you know, and they've been following people very closely and in unpublished studies, they've been following people very closely, and she said it was very rare. So asymptomatic spread essentially doesn't affect a pandemic, may not even be a thing at all. I mean, the PCR test, for example, if you test positive but have no symptoms, does that mean that you're infectious or infected? Well, the answer to that is no. The PCR test itself is so flawed. It throws up many, many false positives. Mike Yeadon said around about 90% false positives. Other people have said 50%. But from the ONS data, when they looked back at the people who were asymptomatic but testing positive, it was around about 86% had no symptoms.
And what about this idea?
So flawed. The cases are not cases. Back in the day, a case was somebody who was severely sick who was in hospital, but not somebody who had just tested positive on a PCR test.
What is it that you don't trust about these PCR tests then? Why are they flawed?
Why are they flawed? Well, first of all, the inventor, Carrie Mullis, it's been said so many times, and I'm almost getting bored of saying it, but Carrie Mullis, the inventor, won the Nobel Prize for it, for inventing the machine, and he said they're not for detecting infections. So that's strike one.
What are they for then?
They use them in laboratories to build DNA in a laboratory, in a lab. So they're used in a laboratory as a tool for constructing DNA, not for detecting viruses. Strike two is that if you go over 35 cycles, because they run cycles on these machines to amplify the amount of viruses there. Anything over 35 cycles is commonly accepted as being a false positive. The NHS currently runs 45 cycles on every test. So the tests are very dubious. And then thirdly, there has never been an isolated and purified virus. So Carl Hennigan has confirmed that when he's looked through the literature. He said that there were no viral cultures, so there's no gold standard. So they can't test the accuracy of the PCR test. So I hope that's not too scientific or too gobbledygooky, but essentially the test is flawed, severely flawed.
So you seem to be suggesting here that the genomes that were published back in end of January, beginning of February, I mean, that was of a virus, the isolated virus, that the Chinese published it, the French published it, even I think the Nepalese. There's a whole load of countries published all virology departments at the genome of COVID. At the time, actually, it was called SARS-CoV-2.
Yeah, that's right. They have published DNA sequences, but DNA sequences of what is the question. And a lot of those have been computer generated. So they never carried through properly with creating viral cultures. And that is the gold standard. So the DNA sequence is essentially meaningless. And so are the electron microscope photographs of these supposed viruses. They're meaningless too.
Okay, so there is a lot of dispute amongst the medical profession. Is there any way that listeners can find somewhere where they can actually listen to these things being disputed amongst doctors with different points of view that makes sense? Because we would hope that would be happening on the TV, but it doesn't really seem to be at all. We're getting a very one-sided coverage. Is there anywhere that you've been able to go, Zach, and find some sensible scientific discussion, debate, documentaries, that sort of thing?
Well, I think the one of the best sources is Professor Carl Hennigan for the Centre of Evidence-Based Medicine in Oxford. So to have a look at his website. He publishes stuff all the time. I don't know how he does it. Must be flat out, absolutely flat out. I'd look at Harvey Risch, who's a medical doctor, professor of epidemiology from Yale. Look him up because he has looked at all the studies on hydroxychloroquine, yes, the Trump drug, I think it's outrageous that they banned this drug on the basis of it being supported by Trump. I mean, I have no strong feelings either way for Trump, but Harvey Risch, you look him up, R-A-S-C-H, he's a medical doctor, professor of epidemiology at Yale, and he says we absolutely, and he is categoric about this, absolutely should be using hydroxychloroquine because it's a cure. So we have cures, and then on top of that, we have vitamin C. When that's been used intravenously, one hospital in London has been using it and had tremendous results. But worldwide, a lot of hospitals have used it intravenously, and it's been an amazing success. Also, vitamin D was particularly used in some Spanish hospitals, given intravenously, sometimes orally. That had an amazing effect as well. Not only cures, we have preventative measures. So we have hydroxychloroquine, vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc, which I would urge. I mean, I would urge all your listeners to take preventatives for this winter, starting now. Build up your immune system now.
They should be. A lot of people do this every winter, don't they? They just basically take some vitamin C, D, zinc in order to just give their immune system a bit of a head start in case any flu virus, cold virus, whatever comes along, because it just gives your body the building blocks you need to beat it.
Absolutely. And in my taxi driver the other day, I was in London for a rally at Trafalgar Square. He had all the answers. Very simple to him, and it's very simple to me too. Ginger, garlic, turmeric, lemon, and honey, and just take more of those. Take them now. Build up your immune system now. So include that in your cooking. Just keep it simple. Build up your immune system.
I mean, it's interesting what you're saying about chloroquine, because I was chatting to a Sudanese guy the other day here in Bristol, and he was laughing. I said chloroquine. He said, well. He said, we've been using it in Asia and in Africa. In my country, we're using it, and we've hardly had any COVID deaths.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? And the countries where it's widely used, COVID deaths have been very minimal. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's proof in itself. But, I mean, more proof is that in Switzerland, they did prescribe hydroxychloroquine, and they used it throughout the pandemic, apart from a couple of weeks when an article came out in The Lancet, which turned out to have been published or written by a sci-fi writer and a porn star. And they had completely made up this study, but somehow managed to get it published in The Lancet. And on the basis of that, Switzerland stopped prescribing hydroxychloroquine. But it's when The Lancet retracted that article a few weeks later, they carried on prescribing hydroxychloroquine again. And you can see quite clearly where they stopped, the death rates shot up. And then when they started prescribing again, the death rates fell again. So I think that's quite telling.
But, it's almost criminal, surely, for the British government and European and American governments, etc., to be stopping the use of chloroquine. Why? I mean, this is almost, you know, could have caused maybe even tens of thousands of deaths.
Well, maybe more. I mean, the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, they're suing the FDA because they haven't been able to prescribe, their doctors have not been able to prescribe and give out hydroxychloroquine. So they're suing, and I hope they win, because, like you say, it may well have cost the lives of many, many, many people. I mean, who knows how many? Maybe millions worldwide. Who knows? But going back to lockdown, they've always said, right from word go, that lockdowns don't save lives. They just flatten the curve and delay the infections and delay the deaths. So I would question, why are we being locked down again in that case? Why don't we just have preventative medicines?
Well, that's a good question, and it's one that's going to be addressed, I hope, on Saturday here in Bristol, a rally organised by Stand Up X, although I'm not quite sure who they are. I mean, the various people, obviously, but the police have said today that they will be banning it, and they will not be allow this rally to take place, and that people should simply go home. And this is obviously a bit contentious, because there's quite a lot of stuff to discuss. It's not really being discussed at all in the press. People in Bristol, some of them anyway, want to get together to talk about these things, and they're not being allowed to.
Well, in my opinion, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to me, I mean, and I guess to you, I know it's going to be for you too, Tony, that We're born on this planet Earth, and that gives us fundamental rights. The government don't give us rights. These rights are given to us by God. And the governments should be protecting these rights. You know, free speech, freedom to assemble, freedom to peacefully protest. There are rights. Absolutely, there are rights. And I don't believe that this legislation that's been passed recently can trump our human rights, our God-given rights, our inalienable rights. So I believe that it's right that we should be allowed to protest. It's right that we should be able to debate these things in a peaceful way. You know, I don't believe the police should be breaking up protests like this. Lord Sumption pointed out quite clearly that the protests run by Black Lives Matter and Extinction Rebellion were not heavily policed, where they were allowed to get on and protest freely how they wanted to, whereas the protests against the lockdown, with speakers who were doctors and dentists and nurses and psychiatrists and lawyers and surgeons and eminent scientists, they were broken up by riot police wielding batons, and police horses were used as well. And the police brutality was extreme and, in my view, totally unnecessary, totally unlawful. And when I experienced it firsthand, I felt that perhaps I'd stepped off the train, not in London, but perhaps in communist China.
Yeah, the other thing, of course, is that with the Black Lives Matter protest here in Bristol, we had on Thursday on the TV channels, it was being advertised, you know, when the actual protest happened over the weekend. I was quite amazed, because you never normally see mainstream TV giving a plug to a protest that's about to happen. The same sort of thing hasn't really happened with the TV and the anti-COVID measures. So I think we seem to be getting a bit of a biased press, which is partly why we're doing this program Anyway, look, back to the rally. Do you think that there is an agenda here? Because it does look to me as if the first lockdown, for example, back in March, there was an express permission for people to be able to have the right to protest and get together and demonstrate, have rallies, that sort of thing, public speaking. Mm. And it's almost as if in the lockdown light, the November lockdown, that was forgotten about, and it's not in any, there's no provision for that at all in this emergency legislation.
Yeah, I wonder if they've left it out deliberately, because like I say, it's a fundamental right, and I am extremely concerned that we're losing our democracy and losing our freedom. I know people might call me extreme, but when you look at Lord Sumption's speech, and I urge everyone to look at it and read the transcript, he outlines exactly what's going on. And I think it was Professor Jonathan Hargreaves, is a law professor from Cambridge. He said that perhaps, the government could be facing lawsuits from millions of Britons over wrongful house arrest. So we were unlawfully arrested, essentially, by being placed under house arrest.
I would
love to see that in court, personally.
We're also being told that we may not be going back to normal for quite a long time. And there's a vaccine coming along on the horizon, which may give us the opportunity, once we've had it, to get back to normal. But there's a very strong message out there saying that without some enormous great cure of some kind, that we're not going back to normal ever.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, I think it was Tony Fauci who said we're going to go on till at least the end of 2022 with these crazy lockdown measures. I dread that. I really dread that. And I think the people of England and the world need to wake up and realise what's happening. This is no longer, I believe, about a virus. This is about changing our government and the structure of government. And, even their government's own advisors, Professor Walhouse, Professor Mark Walhouse from Edinburgh University, who's a professor of infectious diseases and epidemiology, and he's a member of the SPIBE, the Scientific Pandemic Influenza Group. He said, he was in the Express, and he said lockdown was a panic measure, and I believe history will say trying to control COVID-19 through lockdown was a monumental mistake on a global scale. The cure is worse than the disease. So, their own advisors are saying don't do lockdowns. I think was it Dr. Navarro from the WHO who said lockdowns are no longer recommended anymore by the WHO. So why are we doing another bloody lockdown?
It seems that there's a strange agenda of some sort going on. If it's not just looking after our health, what do you think it is?
Well, I agree with Lord Sumption, and I urge everyone to look at his speech. I mean, really, our democracy is being annihilated. Our freedoms are being taken away one by one. And once taken, I don't believe we'll get them back.
Now, you're also part of this thing called the World Doctors Alliance. Can you tell us how that came about and what part you play in it?
Yes, I'm the General Secretary for the World Doctors Alliance, worlddoctorsalliance.com. We had a little plug there. A good friend of mine now, Dr. Adil, Mohammed Adil, is a consultant surgeon, was speaking out against the lockdown and saying that he thought it was nonsense, that there was, people were being harmed by the hospitals being closed. He's a breast surgeon and a colorectal surgeon. Has been for 30 years, and so he likes saving people's lives. He likes doing those operations. He enjoys being a good surgeon and a good servant to the people. And he was heartbroken when his hospital was closed and he couldn't work anymore. It just devastated. They cancelled his operating list. And so he started speaking out and saying he thought the lockdown was wrong, that more people would die of cancer or whatever. Because of the lockdown, and more people would die than the virus, So I just reached out to him because I'd heard he'd been struck off. You see, he'd lost his license or suspended. So I just reached out to him and said, you know, I feel really sorry for you. You know, I applaud you for speaking out. And I wish more doctors would do the same. And then he just replied to me, you know, we don't have a voice. You know, if you try to speak out as a medical professional or as a healthcare professional, they just take your license away. There's no room for debate. You know, you're not allowed to have an opinion, which, again, is just totally unlawful. You know, we have free speech in this country. It's why I love this country so much. You know, we're supposed to be a democracy. And so they just took his license. He has got a review on that on the 20th of November. So would urge everyone to write to the General Medical Council to support Mohammed Adil. And let them know what a great man he is. And yes, so we ran a seminar online with several other doctors and nurses and myself and scientists, and just to try and raise awareness that there was an opposing view to the government's point of view. And we are still plugging away.
Can you just give us an idea of the number of doctors? So, because there was this thing called the Great Barrington Declaration as well, wasn't there? I mean, yes. It does seem as if there's quite a lot of doctors out there who are sceptical, and I wonder, you know, what are the main reasons that they are?
Well, I mean, like me, you know, they're upset. I'm still livid, absolutely livid, that they sent people from hospitals into the care homes and infected them. You know, they sent people with symptoms of COVID to the care homes, the very people who needed protecting. They did not protect. They deliberately infected. And I don't believe it was an accident, because there are far more qualified people than me, far more learned people than me. And I think a child of 6 years of age would realize you don't send somebody with flu-like or COVID symptoms to grandma. So when Hancock says, don't kill granny, I would like to point the finger straight back at him and say, well, you did. So are there many other doctors? Yeah, there are thousands of doctors worldwide. We're involved with many groups worldwide on every continent. There's thousands of doctors speaking out, quite literally thousands. We're just trying to get more of a voice out there so that people can understand that it's not a conspiracy theory, that there are genuine scientific concerns about the entire lockdown. You know, that lockdowns don't work. They've never been used before, and there's a reason for that. It's because they don't work.
Interesting, isn't it? You're talking about sending people with positive symptoms of COVID into care homes. The same people that decided to do that are still now in place and telling us we need to have this extra lockdown. Do you think we'll have a Christmas with our friends and family? Because that's why most people are putting up with this lockdown light, is because that's what they've been told.
I would urge everyone really to have a really good Christmas, no matter what the government says. Frankly, I don't think they have a leg to stand on legally. Why would six people be safe, whereas seven are dangerous? You know, when you go into a pub and you're sat down at a table, if you can go into a pub anymore, of course they've shut them now, but when you could go into a pub, if you sat at a table, you didn't need a mask, but at the moment you stood up, you were at high risk and you had to put a mask on. Or the government says you have to close the pub at 10 or a restaurant at 10, or that theatres can't be open or cinemas can't be open. It's ridiculous. None of this is scientific. None of that. It doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, why should the government tell me what time to go to bed? Only my mum can do that.
Well, also, I mean, you know, it's been, I don't know if you've been to Bristol over the last few months, since the 10 p.m. curfew, but between about 9:30 and 11, maybe 11:30 at night, it's absolute mayhem in the streets. Everybody mixing, nobody social distancing, and it seems almost designed to create a massive kind of contagion spot, if one believes that that's what's going on, sort of late in the evening. So it doesn't really seem to be. Have you seen what goes on in the evenings?
No, I haven't been to Bristol for a while. I haven't seen that, but I have heard from students at university. They're saying they're having COVID positive parties, which I think is great. You can only come in if you're positive. They've got no symptoms, but you know, like they're partying, they're having a good time, and you know, my heart breaks. You know, my university years were some of the best years of my life, and to think that these poor, you know, these youngsters have had their university days ruined. They've had their travel plans stopped. You know, they can't go traveling. You can't go to lectures at university, even let alone go to a nightclub now. I mean, my heart breaks them. They're not at any risk. The COVID-19 only affected the elderly, really. So why stop the youngsters having fun? You know, why stop anyone having fun?
Okay, so what about, you know, the World Doctors Alliance and your own websites? How do people follow what you're up to, Zach?
You can look us up on worlddoctorsalliance.com. We are working with lawyers at the moment and just trying to put together cases. I think action will come because nobody's listening to the scientific debate. I think we've moved on now. We want legal action now. So any lawyers out there listening, or if you know any lawyers, any of your viewers out there, send them our way, please, because we are going to take action.
Dr. Zach Cox, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks ever so much.